China de personas que presentan al mundo la antorcha olímpica se ha transformado en una lección de derechos humanos para la Unión Americana. Beatriz Salas amplía la información.
Decidir sobre quiénes serán los portadores de la antorcha en la ceremonia inaugural de los Juegos Olímpicos de Invierno en Pekín es la responsabilidad de China, y Estados Unidos no está en posición de hacer comentarios despectivos. Así respondió Pekín a la reciente interferencia de Washington, quien aseveró que la elección de China del atleta de la etnia Uyghur, Denis Jilamujian, para llevar la antorcha olímpica es un esfuerzo de Pekín para distraer la atención del llamado genocidio en la región de Xinjiang.
Los llamados comentarios de genocidio de Estados Unidos son la gran mentira del siglo y exponen su intento de politizar los Juegos Olímpicos de Invierno y su siniestra intención de utilizar el tema relacionado con Xinjiang para difamar a China.
China asimismo acusó a Estados Unidos de mentir de manera descarada sobre las minorías étnicas, mientras olvida sistemáticamente discriminaciones en su propio suelo.
Estados Unidos llevó a cabo un genocidio contra los nativos americanos en el pasado y ha discriminado sistemáticamente a las minorías raciales a largo plazo. La población de nativos americanos se ha desplomado de 5 millones a finales del siglo XV a unos 250 mil a principios del siglo XX, reduciéndose a una vigésima parte. ¿Qué es el genocidio? Las políticas que Estados Unidos ha impuesto a los nativos americanos son un verdadero genocidio.
Zhao, además de criticar la discriminación racial contra los africanos y asiáticos en Estados Unidos, dijo que elegir a una atleta de la etnia Uyghur muestra que la política de China de promover los deportes de invierno y mejorar la salud de las personas está beneficiando a individuos de todos los grupos étnicos y prueba que no existe discriminación.
Lo que Estados Unidos debería estar haciendo es revisar cuidadosamente sus propios crímenes históricos contra los nativos americanos y tomar medidas concretas para reducir la discriminación racial contra estas personas y otras minorías raciales, como los africanos y asiáticos.
China, en reiteradas ocasiones, ha instado a Estados Unidos a dejar de usar los asuntos vinculados con Xinjiang para difundir mentiras, interferir en los asuntos internos de China o intentar detener el desarrollo del país. Advierte que, de lo contrario, Pekín dará una respuesta más contundente a la luz del desarrollo de la situación. Beatriz Salas con información de Niloufar Shakuri, Hispan TV Noticias.
Migrantes de todos los rincones del mundo duermen bajo su mismo cielo estrellado. Me los encuentro en las calles, en los cines, en los supermercados, y el olor de sus comidas me embriaga de placer. Todos ellos son mis vecinos.
Y yo aquí vivo, bajo sus leyes domésticas, pago impuestos y mis manos producen la riqueza nacional.
Soy parte de esa comunidad que vive, trabaja y sueña con una mañana mejor para nuestras familias.
Casi todos migrantes como yo, casi todos soñadores como yo.
Trabajemos pues en la construcción de otra nación que nos haga dignos.
Seamos los arquitectos de nuestro sueño colectivo.
Esta radio no tiene comerciales porque tú nos apoyas. Si ya has hecho una aportación económica, te damos las gracias. Si no, hazlo ahora en kpfk.org o llama al 818-985-5735.
Así llegamos al final de esta edición del Informativo Pacífica. Nuestro más profundo agradecimiento a todos los medios y personas que hicieron posible este programa. A nombre de Norma Martínez, se despide tu amigo de siempre, Fernando Velázquez. Gracias por acompañarnos.
Este y otros programas del Informativo Pacífica pueden ser escuchados o descargados en iPod o en forma tradicional en www.kpfk.org en los archivos de audio.
Told me, you know, we'll give you a day, we'll give you a week, however long it takes for you to accept our help to be healed and to become a child of God and denounce being gay.
Honoring the... So, coming up on... This edition of Bathrop Spears Broadsides is a flashback. It's Gobble Gobble Turkey Slaughter Day, or Thanksgiving, as some would call it, here in 2022, November 24th. So I'm returned from a brief bit of tabling at the Thanksgiving Vets Meal, where I was unfortunately an hour late, but did get a few folks to sign the petition to resist the sweeps, or at least be advised of when future sweeps are coming, which I have not heard about yet, and that's good news, but it's a little too early to get optimistic, in my view, given the massive demolition of the benchlands that happened earlier. So, what we have here is the February 14th, 2008 Bathrobes, Piers, Broadsides show, which focused on toleration for, or making the lowest priority for marijuana enforcement for recreational purposes by consenting adults in private spaces, the California, or I should say the Santa Cruz law, because that was done by an initiative which the citizens put on the ballot and which they passed, Measure K. They created an actual commission, which only recently, I guess it was earlier this year in 2022, was sort of formally abolished. But it was neutered long ago. And this was in the early days of the commission in 2008, though, when the commission was still had a hope of actually performing its function, which was overseeing the police department's treatment of minor marijuana so-called offenses that weren't medical, because medical marijuana had in the county been declared legal, but of course you had to be able to have a medical card, and that it was expensive and difficult for some to get. And of course, marijuana is one of the most non-toxic herbs you can imagine. Well, in terms of any kind of euphoriant or consciousness-altering herb, its toxicity is at the bottom of the scale, as far as I know. So in any case, we talked to Brian Parquette in this segment, who was facing particular problems from police who seemed to be violating Measure K. We heard testimony from the vice chair and maybe the chair of the Measure K commission, who essentially resigned because they found the commission was being thwarted. I believe it was by the staff, but it has been, goodness, what, 14 years since 2008. So I'm not entirely clear. My recollection is foggy, but this audio should bring it back. Then there is a segment from Berkeley where there was a massive street protest pro and con against a Berkeley resolution to essentially declare the Marines unwelcome in Berkeley and to support Code Pink, I believe it was. I hope I'm not giving the wrong organizational name. It was a peace group, and there was sort of massive pro-military and anti-military protest, and I journeyed up to Berkeley and interviewed both sides and made my own commentary. And then finally there was a phone interview with Brian Helmsley, who was a member of the San Jose Cop Watch group that had been keeping an eye on police behavior around Cinco de Mayo and police abuses on that day. And those are sort of the three main segments of the show. I'm hoping on Sunday, if you tune in or go to the archives, since we aren't on the radio anymore, and check out, you can also go on the net, I suppose, the show, you may find me talking about, playing a long segment of the memorial for Neotis Comedes, also known as Nick the Greek, where right before, well, it was yesterday as I record this now, on the eve before Thanksgiving, Union of the Homeless Activists organized a memorial at the town clock. And a lot of people spoke. including me. And, you know, it was one of those, we knew the guy, how sad it was he's gone. And I'm not really a big fan of memorials. I think they're, as I told Keith McHenry yesterday, as he told me, somewhat jokingly or somewhat sardonically, well, you should have a memorial before the guy dies. And I say, yeah, you definitely should. You should value the people before they die. But, of course, you can't predict a violent murder. There is a suspect that's been taken into custody, John Frederick Burke. I don't know either Burke or Nick the Greek, the victim. But you'll be able to hear that on, I hope, getting this together on Sunday, as well as some various interviews and bits from the last few months, which I found on a recorder that I had thought was gone and was recovered. Tip of the hat to Glad Eyes Gloria, who found it. Good for you, Gloria. Anyway, I'm not really in shape to do much of a show today. That's how I'm feeling. And I'm hoping that I'll feel more so inclined on Sunday. If you have any news bits, something's been happening out on the streets that you've seen, you think I should know about, or that the community should know about, please give me a call at 831-423-4833, as I usually say on these shows, pretty regularly, actually. And I will give you a call back, or perhaps we can arrange to meet. There was no HUF meeting this week, Homeless United for Friendship and Freedom, but we did have a table set up for about an hour and a half, 2 hours, actually, at the Vets Hall, where there was a surprisingly low turnout. But still good food was served. That was nice. And a somewhat rigid and annoying, if not oppressive, door policy was observed, whether you were trying to use the bathroom or walk in with your backpack or contribute food yourself. You were treated to a kind of a follow the rules bureaucracy kind of thing, which I definitely didn't like. But that'll all be happening maybe on Sunday, or at least some of it, some of the discussion of how folks felt who went to the Vets Hall meal. And at least it happened. It hasn't happened the last year or two, and it's good that it's returned, although, as I say to everybody who's so pleased and optimistic about it, that that means they can, you know, hold on to their bellies or hold on to their appetites for the next 364 days, and then they can get another meal next Thanksgiving if they're lucky. Of course, that's quite a hyperbolic exaggeration, but still, the point is that sort of virtue-signaling charities do not cover real human needs in Santa Cruz. In fact, the real need of the Santa Cruz community seems to be to keep these people who are poor out of sight and out of town. And that hasn't, as far as I can see, changed. Though we didn't get a lot of hard luck stories, partially because there were so few people that we talked to there. We talked to maybe half a dozen folks, more than that, but got half a dozen accounts, perhaps, which you may hear some of on Sunday. So check out the show on Sunday the 27th, and that is part of what you'll hear.
And you're tuned to Free Radio Santa Cruz, 101.1 FM, freakradio.org. My name is Robert Norris, and coming up for the next 2 hours, we have Bathrobes Piers Broadsides, special call-in guest from San Jose at 7:30 on the conviction of one of the, called the San Jose Three, activists who were arrested by police cop watchers after the 2006 Cinco de Mayo protest that so closely followed upon the mass Latino and general protest against immigration harassment, the harassment of immigrants. Stay tuned.
just more I want to see. And I'd be the doctor just for my dream. When I'm trouble-bound to be, he's the guy that gets to be. Hello, send me to my doctor, Jack.
Welcome to Bathrobe Spears Broadside. I'm Robert Norris, and the call-in number, in case you want to join the show, we already got one call about, soon to call in as soon as we get one of our potential guests in the studio. We have a kind of a loose drop-in policy here to some extent, where I'm expecting either one or two people to show up here who have been guests here before, but we're going to follow up on their stories. We're expecting to hear from Brian Parquette. Brian is a man who was arrested for marijuana possession right in the bookshop Santa Cruz outside the bathroom. As he came out of the bathroom, he ended up pleading to a charge of possession, even though he later got a medical marijuana card. He had a relatively small quantity. I think he had a couple of ounces of marijuana, well within the medical marijuana limits. The point was not that the police were being inappropriate in terms of the medical marijuana arrest. Rather, they were violating the Measure K guidelines, which say you don't go onto private property unless it's the lowest priority. And sending two cops into the bookshop Santa Cruz doesn't sound like the lowest priority. And that didn't show up in Zach Friend's report. He's the police officer. Also, I think part of the either the Clinton or the Obama for Fuhrer campaign. Either when I was the head of it or a member of that group. It's neither here nor there, but I find it interesting that, it's good to see your police department politically active. Nothing wrong with that. It's only when they start giving out misstatements about such matters as marijuana, where the drug war is a really major issue in Santa Cruz. Anyway, he'll be hopefully showing up in the studio, and if he does, or even if he doesn't, we'll be getting a call from someone interested in that issue as that issue is joined. And indeed, I had hoped to have a tape of the last city council meeting where the Measure K annual report was supposed to be, well, at least the vice chair, Eric Rice, tried to ask the city council to put it on the agenda. And what was on the agenda instead was this highly bureaucratic mumbo-jumbo about the bylaws, even though the annual report itself it was the issue. In other words, has the police department been following the voters' will passed by 64% of the voters in November 2006? Have they been making the arrest of people involving marijuana with either possession, cultivation, sales, transportation on private property for those over 21, not involved in any other crimes, their lowest priority? And we got at least three complaints at the last meeting of the Measure K Commission, which may well be the last meeting, at least for quite a while, because the city council is mandated, very hostile as the council is to the Measure K, that the Measure K group will not meet again for another 6 months. And, of course, this is, you might think this is strange, that people like Councilmember Rotkin, who has a big reputation as a, cool kind of guy and a medical marijuana friendly character, The reality is, of course, that Rykin's reputation on these issues, as well as those of the other council members, those who have them, and actually it's hard to think of anybody who does, is not deserved at all. The medical marijuana and the recreational marijuana whole drug war issue has, just as with the Democratic Party, has been dropped like a hot potato, even though, of course, it sets the stage for all the constitutional violations we've seen the national government engaging in, and the terrorist war they're waging on terror. Yes, on terror. The war on terror. We have the terrorists in the government waging a war on terror. And similarly, we locally have massive amounts of funding going to the drug war, even though, of course, it just produces more casualties and more corruption and more constitutional violations. But we've known all that for decades, and the question is, when are we going to do something about it? The Measure K Commission timidly made a few attempts to do something about it. Hopefully, Vice Chair Eric Rice will call in. In fact, I see entering the studio now is that drug warrior with his helmet, the infamous Brian Parkett, who actually is being driven out of his residence, as I understand it, because after he complained to the Measure K Commission that about this matter in the Bookshop Santa Cruz, man can't take a dump in the Bookshop Santa Cruz without getting hassled, it appears, he then soon thereafter found a police officer at his door, again on private property, again demanding to know about marijuana. And again, I wasn't present, so maybe Brian is a crafty liar. It could be the guy's wearing dark glasses. I'm rather suspicious. And he's pulling out some money. You can't pay me off, Parkett. Forget it. So who knows what the real truth of the matter is. But we will be talking about that today. Perhaps Eric will be calling in. I did get an email from Eric Rice, vice chair of the Measure K Commission. I should say the gutted Measure K Commission. I've talked about how the city council, in private session, went behind everybody's back, instructed the city attorney to file a lawsuit against the proponents of the measure about a year ago. And then in this kind of, it was done in open court, but it was backstage deal, they essentially gutted the measure. They said that the police department is not, should not be asked for the stats around the issues. They don't have to provide them, based upon this phony rationale that the police department somehow would be corrupted if a commission, which is an adjunct to the city council, directly asked them for anything. In fact, of course, they don't have to directly ask them. They can ask them to the city manager, which is how the city provides these things. And we looked over this whole issue a year ago or more when I was saying this measure was too weak to begin with and also too much money was being spent on it, polling and so forth. Instead, they should put the money into a Public Records Act organization that simply asks for public records. I mean, we can't get these damn commission members to ask for public records. You know, they're a little too timid to do anything, even though I want to commend Vice Chair Rice for actually coming on the show. I don't want to commend Attorney Ben Rice, who was also at the last Measure K Commission meeting, giving this gobbledygook explanation of why he didn't fight this to keep at least some kind of review process in the measure that would make sure the police department's records on medical marijuana were looked over. I don't mean medical marijuana, on recreational marijuana. Marijuana is the lowest priority. The fact of the matter is he essentially surrendered without a fight in a settlement in court, essentially defeating the will of the voters. And that, to me, was outrageous. One of his excuses was, I'm not very good at civil litigation. I'm a criminal lawyer. Another one seemed to be, there are other ways of dealing with it. I was persuaded by the city attorney's arguments. City attorney made similar arguments a year ago, and these arguments were rejected by the proponents of the measure. And indeed, in Santa Barbara, this measure was found to be valid. And Santa Barbara is also a so-called charter city. That's something that's a chestnut that Rotkin and Porter and all these clowns on the Public Safety Committee, which is a committee of the city council, supposedly charged with overseeing the police department, although they're actually the rubber stamping body around the police department, as far as I've seen over the years. They've claimed that because we're a charter city, it's special. Anyway, I've been through this whole thing so many times, I tire of doing it. You can actually catch some of this discussion in archived shows of this particular, my show, which is called Bathrop's Piers Broadsides. Just go to the Huff Homeless United for Friendship and Freedom website, www.huffsantacruz.org, and you'll be able to hear some of my past invective on the issue. You'll be able to hear some testimony from people on it, talking about it. And, of course, the commission has also been stacked with people hostile to the law. as it was originally passed, and who really just want to save the police department money. That's their big deal. They don't want to save the city money by stopping drug war arrests. No, they just want to save the police department money by not having to go through the records to show that they're actually following the law in these arrests. Anyway, in the studio with me, and pull up that microphone, Brian, is Brian Parkett, or should I call him Bad Boy Brian Parkett? I'm not sure. How are you doing, Brian?
Greetings.
Now, have you avoided the bookshop Santa Cruz bathroom? I guess so. You've been banned from the bookshop.
I haven't stepped foot in there.
And did the Coonerty gang tell you were not allowed in their bookshop? Is that what happened?
Well, actually, I ran into Mr. Coonerty.
Which one? The elder or younger?
The elder. And I told him about the situation.
Neil Coonerty,
the supervisor.
He just
kind of looked at me with this glazed look over his eyes. So I politely disappeared.
He didn't offer to correct it?
No, he seemed like he either didn't care or... And he says, "Oh, I'm not in charge. I have nothing to do. You know, I'm."
He's the owner of the bookshop Santa Cruz, along with his daughter, I believe.
And I asked him, "Well, can you put in a good word or something?" And he just didn't seem to want to have anything to do with it.
That's Supervisor Neil Coonerty, previously mayor of Santa Cruz, and also the author of some of the worst downtown ordinances in the state, laws that criminalize people for simply being on the sidewalk. On 85% of the sidewalks become criminal. I'm good. So here we are, and here you are. And if you'd like to call in, you can, 427-3772. I'm hearing a strange sound. Could be a time bomb ticking in the studio. Hopefully not. There's another strange sound. Maybe that'll help us out. Let's see who that is now. Hi, you're on Free Radio with Brian and Robert.
Hi.
Hi.
My name is David.
Hey, David.
And I'm a supporter of Brian and of Santa Cruz.
Uh-huh.
And I believe that the Coonerty family has had a Bush-like grip on political power here in this town for 40 years, and it's time for a change. The winds of change are blowing, and just as America is tired of this son of a Bush, I think it's time that we move on from this monopoly-like authoritarian situation where all laws are written, enforced, and, you know, controlled, judge, jury, and executioner by the great Coonerty clan.
Well, yeah, I got to be fair. I want to be fair to Ryan and to Neil. Ryan is currently the mayor, and he... I was actually watching him conducting the city council meeting in the videotape, which I'll be playing selections from on Sunday. The show also has a longer version on Sunday morning. And indeed, his father was mayor, and it's sort of a dynastic quality to it. On the other hand, Coonerty couldn't do it alone. He needs the help of Rotkin, Matthews, Porter, even people like Madrigal, who occasionally dissent, generally shut up and go along with this stuff, like the parking lot panic law, the 15-minute law that says you can't be in a parking lot or garage unless you are parking a vehicle, and then only for 15 minutes, which, of course, we've ignored, and we're actually successfully fighting by continuing to be there, saying, you know, good, arrest us if you must, but we're going to continue traditional activity. So, I don't know. I mean, it's not just Coonerty. It's the entire city council. And it's, you know, it's a real good question of how to resist these laws, whether it's the sleeping ban or whether it's the failure to get the police to enforce adequate investigation of rape, which we talked about last time. Jillian Greensight was on saying how Rotkin and the council had sabotaged that. And hopefully we'll have her on to do an update on that, because that also was happening at the last city council. I mean, the annual report of the Commission for the Prevention of Violence Against Women. But you're a friend of Brian's. What is there something in Brian's case that particularly struck your notice?
Well, it was simply selective enforcement at its finest. My disgust with his case is completely independent of the fact that I find him tolerable. If my worst enemy were treated the way he was treated by any city on earth, I would be as disgusted as I am.
What about his treatment didn't you like?
Well, he was essentially arrested and jailed and convicted for being disliked by downtown Santa Cruz, and that's not a crime. On any given day on Pacific Avenue, you can find at least 20 people worse than Brian, existing, breathing, eating, drinking, smoking cigarettes, reading newspapers?
Well, remember, he was arrested for possession of marijuana, which, as far as I'm concerned, is complete horseshit.
We're allowed to do that, though. That's the point.
Well, you're allowed
to. It's obvious that this community has legalized marijuana in small amounts.
Well, let me clarify that. No, that's not true. I wish it were. They've legalized medical marijuana with a medical marijuana card if you have enough money to buy one. And Brian has pointed out he didn't have the funds at the time, although, I don't know, a man with his quantities of marijuana might have somehow gotten the funds. I mean, that's here, Brian, you may comment on that. But before you do, the reality is that the Measure K doesn't say marijuana in small amounts is legal. It should. We need that. But that actually is a measure that's coming up for a vote by state voters. But it did say this should be the lowest priority. We're going to make sure it is the lowest priority by looking over the police department's records. Now we can't because the Coonerty Council essentially told them not to do that, you know, gutted that measure, instructed the city attorney to go after it with a scalpel and a scissors. But, you know, Brian was the question is, you know, what do people want to do about this? I mean, he was jailed for a number of days. His property was confiscated. Somebody had to put up a huge amount of bail for him. And he was essentially bullied into pleading guilty to a possession of marijuana charge. By the way, if anybody there is charged with marijuana, plead not guilty and go to trial. You know, I mean, go to trial, please.
Yeah.
Spare me. And also, don't go for the bail. Go for the OR. I mean, marijuana is a nonviolent offense. Don't put up $5,000 to get out on a marijuana charge. It's just a waste of your money, you know, and a waste of time.
Yeah, Brian pleaded guilty to wanting his $5,000 back.
Yeah, that's right. Go ahead, Brian.
David, I don't know how much of the story you actually know, but
anyway, I'm saying that I've been caught with marijuana many times by the police, and they always let me go. I mean, common knowledge in Santa Cruz is
yeah, I know that
they let you go.
Look, in Santa Cruz, compared to the Midwest, for instance, if I was in, say, I mean, you can't say that Santa Cruz, you can't say that they're the worst on the planet, because in the rest of the nation, you could end up on like 6 months in jail, drug rehab, you know, probation.
But we're not really comparing the rest of the nation. We're saying we're in Santa Cruz, we've been here for decades, and they're still doing this shit here.
Yeah. So I'm saying that if the cops arrest you for pot here, there's something else between the lines, because usually they let people, a normal person gets caught with pot, the cops just let them go with the warning.
But you're right. Mr. Aldridge, in particular,
cared about the pot. That means they don't like you for some other reason. That could be anything. That's what I'm trying to get out here.
David, for the record, Mr. Aldridge said that I was corrupting today's youth, quote-unquote, and that I was a, quote-unquote, drug dealer. Now, to call somebody, you know, in the marijuana
those
circles,
things are true.
In marijuana circles, people have to get it from somewhere.
Absolutely.
It has to be grown somewhere, and they have to acquire it somehow. And in the last 30 years, I don't know what, last 50 years, I don't know, back to the 30s when this whole thing started, which also was the rise of fascism, Nazism, and
authoritarianism.
Well, in 1921, the Depression, leading into what? The ending of Prohibition, correct?
Alcohol Prohibition and then other drug Prohibition.
Well, Prohibition, when did Prohibition...
Prohibition actually ended in the middle of the Depression in 1933 when Roosevelt came into power and the amendment was ratified. It began in 1919 when after the First World War. But that was alcohol Prohibition. And we now, of course, have had marijuana and other absurd prohibitions for decades.
And Hitler's rise started shortly thereafter.
1933 is when Hitler's rise started.
Isn't that a coincidence?
Well, his rise didn't start then. He took a power in 1933. But, you know, what we have in Santa Cruz, it seems to me, I mean, I think, you know, you may be right there, David. I also, by the way, when you mention Aldridge, Officer Aldridge, whose name keeps coming up. He comes up as a person who surveils the 15-minute trespass parking lot where the drummers are. He comes up as a person who is accused of breaking the finger of a man he's taken into custody three or four weeks ago outside of Taco Bell. I have a number of concerns about Officer Aldridge. I've got to admit, for those who are interested, I have not made a formal IA complaint, internal affairs complaint, mainly because I've got better things to do than to do that. Although, I mean, if somebody wants to sit down and do it, I'd be happy to sign it. You know, that's no problem. And we do need people who want to do Cop Watch. And in fact, we're going to be talking about with Cop Watchers at 7:30 when we get a call from San Jose on the Brian Helmsley case. Another Brian. So, David, have you been stopped and by the police, and they've seen marijuana, and they said, hey, no problem, keep going?
Yeah, I have personally been let go smoking marijuana and finding it on me and telling me something, because I've personally had that happen.
Do you have a medical marijuana card?
No, I don't. I never have, and I never will.
Do you have a letter from a doctor or recognition?
No, I have none of that. I'm a regular citizen that you know, has been, quote, caught with marijuana by law enforcement in Santa Cruz County many, many, many times. I've had him let me go with it. I've had him take it. I've had him take it and write a ticket. It usually gets dismissed in court. Two or three times I paid the fine. It's, in my personal experience, it's simply not a big deal. It's just not an issue, you know. It's just not in my personal experience.
Well, it seems to me the way to deal with this, I think, I mean, there are a couple things to do. First, you know, you should obviously put the measure on the ballot and vote for it, but whether the state will tax and regulate marijuana as it should, I couldn't say. There's a lot of power.
Yeah, that'd be a... Oh, sorry.
They're powerful. That's okay. They're powerful interest groups against it, who like to, you know, snow us with these myths and fears that have kept this whole drug war going for so many years. But here in Santa Cruz County, and that's what's so outrageous to me, you know, it took 5 years to open some dispensaries after the last ones were closed in 2000, in spite of the great liberals like Rotkin and Christopher Crone and all these clowns on the city council who claimed to be supporting it but didn't do shit. For 5 years. Finally, we have Greenway and a couple of distribution centers, you know, but you have the continued drug war in the county, and you have the drug war which the Santa Cruz Police Department is participating in, and you have them essentially disobeying Measure K and or gutting it. Go ahead, Ryan.
I hate to interrupt you, but once again, there's this drug dealer, drug war, right? The definition of a drug, in my opinion, is a pill, something you inject.
Exactly.
Okay, it's something that's been scientifically condensed into...
Yeah, not a botany product.
I don't know what the proper word is. But marijuana is a precursor.
Marijuana is an herb.
It's in the same classification as new leaf with, you know...
Exactly.
All the different...
Well, the same thing is true with psilocybin mushrooms, for that matter, or peyote.
I agree.
And all kinds of other psychedelics. And frankly, I mean, LSD, I think, while a drug... In the sense that it's synthetic, it's synthesized, you know.
Or DMT.
You know, or DMT or other, you know, other drugs of that sort. You know, I mean, I don't want to get into a long argument about whether, you know, because I think everyone listening, I'm sure the three of us agree that this is a matter of individual choice.
Yeah.
You don't want to make it available to minors for the same reason you don't want alcohol to be available to minors, although they get it anyway, so you need to educate people.
I think we can safely say that alcohol is worse than marijuana, so whatever pertains to alcohol legally would be appropriate, you know, by definition, default. Or,
right. Again, the question is, what do we do about it in Santa Cruz? And the answer is, I think, A, you profile and publicize officers who are particularly militant around this issue, like Officer Aldrich. I don't have enough comparative data with other officers, but his name does keep coming up in a number of contexts.
In reference to Officer Aldrich, my impression of how he treated me was as if it was some deep down political hatred. Okay, and I've dealt with a lot of officers.
He was one of the two officers who arrested you at the
motion. There are officers out there that hate me, I'm sure, and there are officers out there that tolerate me, or, you know, but they usually are generally pretty, you know, respectful, because, like, because I try my best to not do anything wrong, and, you know, I don't do drugs, I don't do alcohol, and I don't endorse it, drugs or alcohol.
Right.
I mean, it's up to the individual, I'm sure, but...
I mean, the issue here, frankly, is one of
the issue
selling,
is marijuana.
Selling marijuana, making it available to people who are low income, people who are poor, people who may not use it for medical reasons, but may use it for recreational reasons. And this, you know, they say, well, it's illegal under state law.
You have a God-given right to smoke marijuana, you know. From God, like in the Constitution, we have a right to
until you, David, and you, Brian, get together, others in the community to, you know, to do the kinds of public protests and organizing that, you know, establish that right, because you know, I mean, it's a God-given right for, you know, for people not to be shot dead in Iraq because they happen to be Iraqis, and you know, the United States wants to control the country, but they're doing it as we speak.
And when they come back with their leg blown off and they need some weed,
we're not the drug crowd, we're not the violent crowd, you know.
They don't want to take OxyContin because they're shitting bricks.
But the fact is, you know, it requires activism to get this kind of stuff changed, and that's the issue. David, I appreciate you calling in. Is there more you want to say?
Just that I think the marijuana smokers, I think we all need to you know, lead by example and show that we are distinct, independent, and superior to alcoholics, tweakers, scufflaws, ne'er-do-wells, et cetera, so that the, you know, so that no one can ever deny, you know, that we are upstanding citizens.
Well, thank you,
David. The highest of all citizens, the great marijuana-smoking philosophers of ancient times.
I appreciate that. Thank you.
All right.
Bye-bye. He said to me as he was having me hauled to jail, he would be able to tell society, not in so many words, he would be able to tell that he took a drug dealer off the street today.
Yeah, I know. That's kind of, you know, it's like I got a commie or a pervert or a, I don't know, whatever. There's a kind of an obsession and an unfortunate strain that kind of runs through this. I mean, and the problem we have here is that I would have to interrogate you closely about, you know, your past record in terms of convictions for marijuana sales, which, as far as I'm concerned, is irrelevant. But as far as he's concerned, of course, is a big deal, or what he sees. And I think that's irrelevant. I think the question, though, is what do we do about it? What can this community do, given the fact that the city council is caving into this? And we have a call, I think. Hi, you're on free radio, or you were. Try again, caller, and we'll try and catch you when you call again. You're tuned to Free Radio, 101.1 FM, freakradio.org. I'm Robert Norris. This is Bathrop Spears Broadsides. And, Brian, I know that you, after this police officer in plain clothes came to your door, again, demanding to be let in without a search warrant after this arrest for marijuana where you pled to, what, possession of less than an ounce or something, or possession of an ounce?
Possession of less than an ounce.
Less than an ounce, and you paid some fine of $300.
They call it a dash B.
Well, in any case, in order to get the bail money back to your friend, as how you described it, some days later, this guy came to your door. This officer, you found out that it was an officer because you 911'd in, and they confirmed there was a cop at your door who wanted to come in to look for marijuana. You said, "Show me your warrant." No, thank you. And he went away. Right?
I never answered the door. I spoke through the crack. I never unlocked it.
Right. But you said you didn't open the door for that.
I see somebody without a uniform, and there's no reason.
Well,
for
if he had
a
uniform, it didn't make any difference. He has to have a warrant to get into your apartment. And of course, this whole drug war stuff. I would suggest calling five friends.
And I get really scared.
And then you also witnessed, and I think you showed me a video of how the management of your apartment complex then sent in one inspector after another, 1 month after the next, to harass you and to look
over. Culminating.
And now you're leaving because you've had enough of that in where you're living. You know, it's hard to get all the
little details
to understand what you know whether. There's other factors involved, but insofar as this is, you know, drug war stuff, it pisses me off. And, of course, I'm eager to hear what people have to say about what we can do about this. I used to, you know, to suggest smoke-ins, although, you know, some people don't like smoke for different
reasons. It helps for my post-traumatic stress disorder from all these stressful situations that I go through in life.
Well, some people don't like tobacco smoke, and some people don't like marijuana smoke outdoors, and I mean, there's a people can have allergies and sensitivities to it, but I think the same kind of civil disobedient process that has resecured the parking lots, or at least one of the parking lots, parking lot number 4, the Drum Circle, because for 4 weeks now, it's either 3 or 4 weeks now, the Drum Circle has not been molested by the police department, at least not actively, in terms of arrests or warnings of that sort. And that same solidarity, I think, can work in the same way with respect to marijuana use. If people want to get together and start doing what they did, you know, in the 70s and the 60s, which is have smoke-ins. Or I know that there are these sort of timid one-day wham things where if it's politically correct, you know, they'll come and talk about how medical marijuana is important. But as for the other 750,000 people who are arrested and, I don't know, 50 or 60,000 of whom are now in jail for marijuana possession, cultivation, and sales nationwide, fuck them. You know, we're a special medical group. The rest of the people don't count. You know, that's ridiculous. And that kind of division, I think, has really set back the movement to, I don't want to call it the, you know, drug legalization. It's a move to restore sanity in terms of the American priorities and to get back to, I don't know, real issues and
something that grows like a
jail.
Weed.
What's that?
With something that grows like a weed.
Yeah,
and it's a seed-bearing plant. So if you look in the Bible under seed-bearing, you should be able to find a passage that explains exactly where we're coming from. if you're a Christian and believe in the Bible.
Up in Mendocino County, and I subscribe or don't subscribe, actually buy the Anderson Valley Advertiser from New Leaf Market. Up in Felton, they sell this. There's an article by Jenny Shepherd in Ukiah, Make Pot Like Wine. Article reads like this: Making marijuana part of a sustainable economy. The country's marijuana crop, county's marijuana crop up in Mendocino, is worth an estimated $80 million. What happens to our local economy if it goes away? Local businesses know that a significant proportion of their revenues come from this cash crop. In reality, local business owners, workers, and their families would be economically devastated if marijuana were to suddenly vanish. Repealing Measure G. Measure G is the measure somewhat similar to our, I think it was Measure A in 1993 we passed here, which advised, with a countywide measure that said it's okay to, you know, to grow, smoke, cultivate medical marijuana. And Measure G is a similar measure. It doesn't refer to recreational marijuana like Measure K does, or all marijuana, just to medical marijuana. But it was passed in 2000 up in Mendocino and allowed for, this was actually after Proposition 215 passed statewide, and so, and a few years before SB 420, the state regulating of medical marijuana came in. Anyway, there's a movement, a prohibitionist movement happening up in Mendocino, as in different places, to make it harder to obtain medical marijuana, harder to cultivate it, harder to grow it, and increase the penalties for growing too much of it. Repealing Measure G is one of the things that these prohibitionists want to do. Repealing Measure G is not going to make marijuana vanish from the county, writes Jenny Shepherd. There is no surefire way to forecast the effect of repealing Measure G. But what if instead of obsessing over Measure G, we took a radically different tack and worked to make marijuana part of a sustainable economy? What would that look like? Here's one vision. Require all marijuana to be grown by permit only. Non-permitted marijuana would be illegal. I don't necessarily agree with this, but this is something for us to think about. Charge a substantial permit fee for each plant sufficient to compensate the county for the cost of administering a regulatory scheme, plus enough to cover a portion of the services attendant to any business in the county. Hire inspectors to visit marijuana gardens to enforce the permit requirements. Require marijuana to be grown according to organic standards. Require all marijuana grown in the county to bear labels saying it was grown in Mendocino County according to organic and local sustainability standards. Outlaw growers would either be shut down or trade in their outlaw status to become proud contributors to the local economy. Charging fees would ensure enough money to shut down the outlaws. I don't think that would ever work. Mendocino marijuana would command higher prices because most consumers would prefer buying a safe product rather than taking the chance of being poisoned by pesticides, fungicides, and artificial fertilizers that are used by many growers today. Selling marijuana to minors would be strictly prohibited, just as selling cigarettes and liquor to minors is prohibited. Medical marijuana users would get a better product, one free of poisons. The land and water would remain clean because growers would not be allowed to use poisons or pollute the streams. What's not to like? Surely the feds would not like it, but they don't like marijuana, period. I say let's not worry about that for now. Marijuana is not going to go away. Let's face the reality of marijuana and make it part of a sustainable local economy. And that's, again, that's in the Anderson Valley Advertiser, January 30th, which you can buy at the New Leaf Market in Felton. And I believe it's also on sale at the Capitola Book Cafe and maybe on sale at the Bookshop Santa Cruz, but I don't know because I've been banned from there for the last 14 years. The problem with this approach is sort of similar to the problem I heard when the caller, David, who called in, was saying, you know, let's show that we're the best citizens, that we can be responsible and so forth. People who drink alcohol don't have to go around and prove they're responsible. In fact, one of the reasons you drink alcohol is to be irresponsible, is to cut loose. And there's nothing wrong with that, provided you're not driving a vehicle or beating up your neighbor. I mean, I'm not a drinker. I'm not much of a smoker. I smoke a little marijuana, you know. But the idea that you have to vindicate yourself because somehow you have to counterbalance the absurd paranoia and defamation that marijuana has undergone is ridiculous. There's no need to do that. And what we just have to need is understand what the truth of the matter is and then act on it in a solid, mobilized way. And I don't know how we're going to do that because we have so many other things to do, like survive for most people, do two or three jobs, deal with a non-existent health insurance, you know, and watch the empire, you know, murder people abroad in Iraq and Afghanistan. And, you know, us pay for that. Billions and billions and billions of dollars. It's what, $10, $11 billion a month for these two wars overseas? It's hard to imagine what that actually means, and I'm about to actually play some tape from Berkeley about that controversy as it arose on Tuesday at the Berkeley City Council. Hi, you're on Free Radio with Robert and Brian.
Just a Measure K report.
Uh-huh.
Did you give one yet?
Well, I wasn't at the Measure K hearing. I was up in Berkeley doing interviews between the pro and con military recruiters out of Berkeley resolution, which the Berkeley City Council passed, or the Marine military recruiters out of Berkeley. I did get an email, however, from Eric Rice, the vice chair of the commission, and I can read you what that email said.
What do you think of Eric Rice, Robert?
Well, I think we've talked about that. Have you been listening to Eric? We talked about that on the air. Did you hear my... He was on the show, you know.
I heard Eric on your show, Robert.
Right, right.
What do you think of Eric Rice as a representative for...
Well, I've told you, I think Eric is too timid by half. On the other hand, he's more accessible than most. And he seems like a very nice guy. And he, you know, he listens to my show, which is unusual. I mean, I'm glad that somebody, you know, you do too, for that matter.
Is it safe to assume that Measure K is a $70,000 joke?
It's safe to assume that the city council is spending more than that to defeat it, and that it's not Measure K that's the joke. It's the city council that is sabotaging the will of the voters.
I've given my opinion on this issue in the past, and I won't regurgitate.
Right. So would I. I'm not going to go blame Measure K, although you've heard my criticism of it. But I'm much more critical of government agencies that sabotage the will of the voters, particularly around the drug war. I think it's very dangerous when they do
that.
Well,
like I said, I mean, I've given my opinion, and I think that's the root of the matter as to why Measure K
Not Measure K, it's the city council we're talking about here.
Took the path of being a $70,000 joke.
Yeah, well,
it's no joke when the city council
disenfranchises the voters.
It was high-financed blowhardism.
Well, you know...
I'll listen off the air.
Sure, why don't you do that? You know, I think it's easy for us... I mean, if you want to talk about blowhards, Bob and I are blowharding at each other, you know. I mean, people who actually want to establish some procedures whereby the government is held in check and then are sabotaged by the city council that does this I don't think they should be particularly criticized. I know that Bob has his concerns about this, you know, that because it was a shoestring operation mostly done on money that came from out of state. The people who did it didn't sign up to join the commission, and neither did he, for that matter. Actually, he did, and then he backed off, as I recall. So, you know, I'm going to turn now, although I'll give Brian the last word here, and he's welcome to hang in the studio, to the war in Iraq. And the first major media breakthrough on that war that I've seen in the last 6 months, year, 2 years, I don't know, I guess Cindy Sheehan, with the camp, Casey had something of a breakthrough, but... We have a caller. Hi, caller. You're on Free Radio.
Just to be brief, Robert, I withdrew when I found out definitively that not one of the proponents or endorsers even applied.
I know. You said that before.
Or was going to apply.
Yeah, that doesn't make any difference.
For a position on the Oversight Committee, which was the only way the thing was going to survive.
Well, you don't need
beyond
them.
Being a well-funded joke.
You don't need them to apply, Bob. You could have taken some responsibility yourself.
Right. Robert, I was not an endorser.
So what?
And
you
I
applied.
Was not a proponent.
You applied, and then you,
That's
then
right.
you backed
I applied,
off. Come on.
I applied hoping. I applied hoping that I would help to get those that were crucial involved.
Well, did you call them up and talk to them? Did you call them up and talk to them? No, you
yeah,
didn't.
Yeah,
come on.
Yeah, Robert.
You know, you ranted on the radio with me. That's fine. We can rant,
Robert,
about it together.
I've talked. I've talked as much as I can talk.
You haven't
about
talked
it.
To them. You didn't call them, did you? Did you? Did you call them
I
or not?
I communicated with them.
You did?
And they knew that I communicated with them.
So you emailed
There's
them.
Enough of a track record of communication.
Well, what did you do? Did you call them or did you email them?
I emailed.
Well, good for you. Then I take that back.
As I said, when I found out definitively that not one, and by the way, I was too controversial to be a proponent.
Well, I'm glad you're controversial. I'm glad you say what you think.
Well, I'm telling you what I was told.
Oh, too.
All right.
Bye.
Okay. Now, and I'll pass on that. Who?
Let me ask you this, Bob. Was the side that told you?
As it turns.
Was that the city council side, or was it the activists who told
it
you?
It was a key activist.
Oh well.
I'm too.
Don't let that get you down.
That's fine, Robert. That I'm too controversial. All right, fine.
I think you're too conservative.
Step up to the plate.
What's that?
Okay, step up to the plate. What it ended up being was a something that could be easily destroyed because no one that was crucial was there to defend it.
Well, I think that's true.
It's the bottom line, my good man, in my opinion.
Yeah, I think
I'll listen on the air.
Thanks, Bob.
Thank you, Robert.
All right. Brian, you have a thought?
Yeah, I'd like to state for the record, if anybody just happens to be listening, coming into somebody's house screaming fire code violations is, in my opinion, and just making it up as he goes along where there is none.
And this is what actually...
Trouncing through somebody's house disrespecting them...
This is what happened to you recently.
...is, to me, equivalent to screaming fire in a theater. And I have it on tape.
Yeah, well, I mean, I would say it's different because if you falsely shout fire in a crowded theater and it creates a panic, then it could be a criminal behavior.
And
but
then afterwards, the cops showed up, and the cops...
It's a different kind of crime when you invade someone's house under spurious pretext of there being fire regulation violations. I think it's bad for a different reason, but, you know, I don't think it's quite the same thing. But, yeah, I mean, I think that it sounds like... I mean, there may be different reasons why your landlord doesn't like you, and it may be...
That's fine, but coming in saying...
No, it's bullshit, but the question...
And calling the police.
And on the air, the question we have here is this connected to your protests against Measure K? Is this connected to your...
I don't know where the connections are.
We know you're going to be outside. You're going to be homeless.
Anything's possible.
You were homeless before, now you're going to be homeless again, right? That's what you've had to make that choice.
I don't know about you, but I'd rather be homeless than be in a place.
I'm saying that, but that's going to be a consequence.
Where the brown shirts come in and
that's a consequence
bully you in your own house.
That's a consequence of this police harassment you feel you suffered, right?
Police harassment. But once again, they came into my house under the auspices of a maintenance inspection and started claiming all these fire code violations, which were not true. Everything was completely turned off, and in the cases that the major cases, I showed the officer directly that the things weren't even plugged in.
You're talking about equipment that could be used to grow marijuana under some circumstances.
It could be used to grow anything, but that's the point. Look, I'm an industrial technologist, and that's what I do. I study things, and in this case, horticulture equipment. All UL listed 120 volt.
Right,
you know,
but
I can't I can't possess what I want to.
If you and I are going to speak frankly, the
there was nothing growing there.
You're growing carrots and vegetables.
I wasn't growing anything.
No, but you have a perfect right to grow marijuana, frankly, because first of all,
even the issue? It doesn't matter what I'm growing.
It does matter in the sense that if we want to understand the motivations of the police department and your landlord and the fire department, if there is a determination that they want to come after you because they think you're a marijuana grower and dealer, that's important to be clear about it because it's a bad thing for them to do.
I think it's irrelevant when I'm growing and the square footage was under their 100 square feet.
Well, it sounds also like you had a, you know, you have a right to grow medical marijuana. You got your recommendation. You have your card. You have the condition that you grow it for. It's just bullshit. I mean,
I know that the federal government says I can't.
Federal government is not relevant. We're talking about the local government. The federal government isn't involved. That's another blind here.
It's a Section 8 property.
You know, well,
that's why I wasn't growing anything.
So that's why you're not.
I was studying the technology.
Right. Okay. And that's why you weren't growing anything because you didn't want to violate your Section 8
requirement. No, I didn't want to violate the Section 8 requirement, and I didn't want to break federal law.
You've lost your Section 8 because of this, right? You've had to abandon it, or do you still?
I'm abandoning that place.
And you have Section 8.
As whether they take it away from me, I don't know. That remains to be seen.
Okay. I thought that you said there was a risk of that at some point. Okay. Well, I'm going to turn now to Berkeley and the city council up there, and the issue of Marine recruiting. We've seen in Santa Cruz, for those who don't know, probably many of you do because you've been following this issue, that the University of California students have, in essence, driven recruiters. I think it's Marine recruiters, but I think it's also other recruiters. I'm not quite sure which branch of the military they drove off the campus, but they they loudly protested, and they essentially kicked him off campus. And the same thing, to a lesser degree, was the objective in Berkeley of, I guess, the Peace and Justice Commission. I don't have the specific resolution in front of me, although I do have some of the papers that I picked up there. The Berkeley Daily Planet is a good website to go to get more information on this issue. The Berkeley Daily Planet is a free 2 or 3 times weekly paper that comes out. It's both online and print up in Berkeley. And, of course, as fate would have it, I'm having a little trouble accessing the proper report. I thought I had it here with me, and I probably do. But where is it, is the question, of course. That's always the question. Looks like, Brian, you're getting ready to take off. I wanted to thank you for coming in. And keep us advised as to what's going on.
Yeah, I think the main reason why I came here was because my grandfather was killed by Nazis.
And you wanted to advise people...
Somewhere on the East German border.
Right. Well, I think the drug war, you know, produces all kinds of abuses.
And he had bad taste in women.
What's that?
He was like a Jewish, like, importer-exporter technologist of some sort. And he had bad taste in women. And his wife was a Nazi.
Interesting.
And they had a baby.
Yeah.
And somehow that baby got out of East Germany and I was born.
Well, good. I'm glad you're still with us. And let's hope that we can stop something similar from happening here.
And this whole situation...
Yeah, Brian, this is off topic. It's not relevant to really what we're talking about, I think. Although I hear it's a matter of passion to you, but
I'm sure it has something to do with food.
I don't know what it has to do with, but I think your case is relevant in terms of harassment of people who are using, growing, cultivating, or selling marijuana, which I think is the issue for me. You're tuned to Free Radio, 101.1 FM, freakradio.org. The Measure K Commission. Here's what I heard from Eric Rice, or actually what I read. Eric apparently attended the council meeting. He sent me an email that said that they requested, he actually personally requested the council to hold a public hearing on the annual report, because the annual report does show that there seems to be some contradiction between what Zach Friend of the police department says and what the people who are making complaints about the police department's not following Measure K are saying. That was my interpretation of what went down at the Measure K hearing, where 3 people complained. I was one of them on behalf of Craig Canada. He asked for there to be a public hearing on the annual report. He asked that they be allowed to hold 3 more hearings before June. Right now they're not allowed to hold any hearings because the council has cut off funding or not scheduled the hearings. And he also wanted to approve the bylaws as approved by the committee. And the city council refused all 3 of these requests, according to his email to me. However, there was one vote in favor of the bylaws, Councilmember Tony Madrigal. And I'm not sure what the significance of the bylaws is. Perhaps we can get Eric to talk about it, either if he's listening to call in and give us a little explanation, or possibly on Sunday when that matter may come up. Basically, Mike Rotkin, according to Eric's report, led the discussion, said he was satisfied with the annual report as it was submitted. It was not a priority that would merit more investigatory ability or meeting flexibility. In other words, sit down and shut up. We don't want to give the public an opportunity to make complaints publicly, and we don't want you to be discussing this issue either in a public forum, even though the voters voted for it. Thank you, Mike Rotkin. Of course, this is the same Mike Rotkin who refused to put on the ballot a measure about the Iraqi war was it the Iraqi war or was the impeachment of Bush? It was one of those 2 issues in 2006. He refused to put it on the ballot. Instead, he wanted it passed as a city council measure, and I think he did that because he didn't want people drawn to the polls who would essentially vote against his kind of candidate, because they would be voting for more militant action against the Iraqi war. That was my interpretation of what he did at that time. Committee plans, according to Eric, are non-existent since we can't meet until June, and there is still a subcommittee which is in a state of flux. They may hold a subcommittee meeting to which the public may be invited. So that's something to think about. Again, the call number here, in case you want to comment on anything you're hearing, is 427-3772. There'll be a 7:30 call in, hopefully, from Brian Helmsley from San Jose Cop Watch. Coming up on Sunday, I'm expecting a number of people to call in. Julie Costanza Gomez, at least that's what she was called when I knew her before, was a key figure in defending the rights of the Dolphin Lee tenants who were driven out of their housing by the City Council's Dolphin Lee Project, now called the Nueva Vista Project, without adequate guarantees of return and relocation. And that it was a big issue like 8 years ago, and she's going to be giving us an update on that. Why is it important? Well, these are all Latino people, low-income Latino people. The City Council, you know, supposedly is trying to help out. And actually what was being done here was a pet project by a pet group called Mercy Housing was being built at their behest, and it was not, instead of opening up more housing, they were destroying housing. We spent a lot of time fighting it. We weren't successful, but we did educate the community. We'll get an update on that on Sunday. We'll also be hearing from a disabled activist in Berkeley on People's Park and the latest there, Dan McMullen. He'll be calling in, hopefully. And Julia Vinograd, the local poet up there, the street poet, a brilliant writer. Her latest book, When God Gets Drunk, just come out. I bought it up in Berkeley when I was up there. She'll be calling in to read stuff from the book, which I think will be really enjoyable. And then we're going to be hearing from John Walsh, I believe, although I've gotten a letter confirming, but I didn't get back to him, and there may be a scheduling conflict, so I'm not quite sure where we're at with that. But I'm going to actually read a little something from Walsh's article, which struck my attention or caught my attention. It's on counterpunch.org, and I'll probably be reading more of it before he comes on Sunday, once I've confirmed that he's coming on, but I think he is. And let's see if I can find him. Here it is. It's Anti-Warriors Divided and Conquered. And I've also invited Steve Argue to come on to give a counterpoint on this. This is around the issue of why can't people get together and throw out the war crowd, the pro-war crowd, whether you want to call yourself a Ron Paulista or a Dennis Kucinichista or a Naderista. Why can't people get together and just unite on this issue and demand that the war end, which is, I think, really what we need to be doing? I see all this bullshit babble about Clinton and Obama all over the airwaves, and I'm not interested. I mean, I don't care, because neither of them are interested in ending the war in Iraq, and neither of them will. And that being the case, we have to talk about real issues, not about the fancies that the media throws up in our face. And that's what I try to do on Free Radio, and that's what I encourage others to do. And I really try to avoid getting distracted by, you know, the pre-selected candidates that we get to look at, and they give us the bogus delusion of a choice around. Here's what John V. Walsh writes. Shame on us all, anti-warriors divided and conquered, February 12, 2008, on the Counterpunch website. There is an enormous anti-war majority in this country, upwards of 70%, and yet the war goes on and on and on. Who is to blame? We could blame the denizens of the two war parties in Congress. The leading Republican and Democratic presidential candidates have a record, and without exception, it is a pro-war record. McCain froths at the mouth at the prospect of more war. Hillary was there from the beginning and has voted yes in every pro-war resolution in the Senate, from authorizing the war to voting for the trillions that have been used to fund the damn thing. Comparing the votes of Edwards and Obama is especially instructive. When Edwards had a vote in the Senate, his votes declared him pro-war. Once without a vote, he said he was against the war, but there was no voting record to show it. He was for it before he was against it. Obama's record is even less defensible. He said he was against the war until he had a Senate vote. Then he voted for each and every pro-war appropriation. Hence, Obama was against it before he was for it. In every case, give them a vote and they vote to kill. But what about the rest of us? We know the world is bristling with nuclear weapons and wars, and a war mentality threatens us with their use. Nuclear winter threatens all higher life with extinction, and nuclear winter is still all too possible. In fact, nuclear winter would make global warming look like a kiddie sandbox. And beyond the threat to our very survival, empire and the wars that spring from it threaten our civil and political liberties, without which no change, no progress is possible. The libertarians especially have raised the point that once empire crowds out a republic, then the days of liberty are gone. The paleoconservatives agree, and the progressives also agree, recognizing as well that valued social programs cannot be funded with enormous wealth plowed into our empire of 757 foreign military bases and 969 domestic bases, none designed for defense, but instead for offense to, quote, project power throughout the empire. With such strong and varied anti-war sentiment, is it not remarkable that the anti-war movement has come to nothing? Our country is now embroiled in Iraq and Afghanistan and countries on Russia's perimeter, in Iran, in many parts of Africa, and elsewhere. And the war parties, Democrat and Republican, are itching for a fight with China. Altogether, the situation is pretty miserable. So why the great gap between popular sentiment and effective anti-war action? I submit that the war parties, Democrat and Republican, very effectively use a divide-and-conquer tactic, and the anti-war forces play into it, usually quite eagerly. So when some on the left have good things to say about Ron Paul, the sterile lefty ideologues quickly change the subject. If that does not work, those who speak favorably of Paul are excoriated for being right-wingers in our innermost thoughts, which we ourselves cannot plumb, we are told, although the psychoanalysts of the left can. And if that does not work, the thought nannies tell us that Ron Paul is a Nazi, another Hitler, who is to be opposed at all costs. That kind of stuff emanates especially strongly from the precincts of the New Republic, it's a magazine, which has been calling for Paul's head ever since he dared say AIPAC in public. That's the American-Israeli Political Action Committee. In so doing, the ASPs at TNR, the New Republic, are merely repeating the hate campaign against Pat Buchanan, whom they and their allies at the National Review, a right-wing magazine, labeled an anti-Semite. And so the anti-war left is manipulated into avoiding alliances which might actually make some headway. Thus, we have the spectacle of progressives who eschew alliances that might make, well, progress. The same is true on the other side. The paleos, and to a lesser extent the libertarians, paleoconservatives are the conservatives before the neoconservatives. It's kind of a different group. They were the group that opposed involvement overseas and building military bases after the Second World War. People like Taft, who probably most of you don't know, Robert Taft, who were conservative in ways that many people who are listeners to the station might not agree with, but at least on the foreign policy issue they probably would. Libertarians, of course, are people who believe in very little government, and therefore they want very little foreign involvement as well. So these are two groups. The paleos, and to a lesser degree, the libertarians, cannot put aside differences with Greens and other leftists long enough to make headway against war and empire. As soon as common cause begins to be made and the specter of increased social spending is raised by the libertarians and of creeping secularism by the paleos, in other words, the people on the right say, oh, these liberals, we agree with them on the war, but look, they want to increase social spending. Or look, they favor church and state separation. And because everyone wants only allies that are in complete agreement, no alliances are made, and presto, the ruling war parties have divided and conquered. Such behavior on the part of the anti-war movement is childish in the extreme. For the sake of ideological purity, we give up on making common cause with others who agree with us only in part. For an impossibly long shot at gaining everything, we sacrifice gaining the most important thing at the moment, an end to war and empire. That is not politics, that is theology, or perhaps more accurately, the behavior of spoiled kids, or perhaps even more accurately, behavior unencumbered by the thought process. And it is boring to boot. The crowd one hangs with has all the answers to every question, and no matter how much reality shifts, as with the end of the Cold War, the answers remain the same. So what is to be done? It is time for the various anti-war groupings and ideologies to get together and to do so in a way that can have an effect on the 08 elections. First, we have to begin a conversation to decide on a course of action, and we must do it soon. So far, the only places that seem willing to host such a conversation are Counterpunch.com, Antiwar.com, and the American Conservative. There are also a lot of smaller grassroots groups like AntiwarLeague.com and the Second Vermont Republic, which have made strides at unifying various anti-war factions. It is clear, however, that United for Peace and Justice, ANSWER, PDA, The Nation, and others will never serve this function. They will put loyalty to the Democratic Party over all else, nor will the Demo Greens or inside the Beltway Libertarians ensconced in their high-priced digs at the Cato Institute act to break down barriers. They, too, put party, whether Democrat or Republican, first. Perhaps, and I know a lot of people are maybe not following all these these names and so forth. But the point here, I think, is that we need to get together on the issue of anti-war and anti-empire and realize that that has got to be the grand coalition we do, rather than engage in ideologically pure type crusades that isolate ourselves from each from the other. Perhaps with a debate revolving around the question of how we, the anti-war majority, are effectively marginalized, we can move forward. But to do that, we have to suspend some of our ideological certainties and stereotypes of the other and concede that there are more things in heaven and earth than we have dreamed of or at least embraced in our theories, and we may find that we have more in common than we thought. Why not do this? We have nothing to lose and much to gain, so let us hope that the discussion can begin in earnest, and let's move fast. 2008 is slipping away. You know, I don't even know if it's the election that's the issue, although I see that's John Walsh's concern, and he may be on the air on Sunday. I believe he's already agreed to, and assuming that he's, you know, we can confirm that, he'll be on probably around noon. And again, the article I just read is Shame on Us All, Anti-Warriors Divided and Conquered. I'm going to play you now some tape from interesting divisions that happened Tuesday right outside the Berkeley City Council. What the Berkeley City Council was voting on was whether to apologize for or rescind a letter they were going to send to the Marines that said, we don't like you, we don't want you recruiting in our area, because essentially, you know, you're a bunch of killers. You're sending young people overseas I would put it to become war criminals. Maybe I can get the exact resolution here. Let's see what the Berkeley Daily Planet says. Take a look here. By the way, you're tuned to Free Radio, 101.1 FM, freakradio.org, and that's what's cooking. Well, here is the update on what actually happened at the council meeting, where everybody was. I didn't stay for the end of it because it went on. They allowed Berkeley City Council, unlike the Santa Cruz City Council, actually allowed everybody to say something. Ryan Coonerty is cutting short oral communications. It's now only 2 minutes each, and it's been divided into two portions, 3 o'clock and 7 o'clock, beginning of the 3 o'clock session and the beginning of the 7 o'clock session. And he's naturally, I don't think he wants to hear what the public has to say particularly. It's not, as a good Democratic Party member, the party can make the decisions, the city council can make the decisions, everybody else can sit back and watch. Anyway, this is what happened at at Berkeley. Council softens language, supports protesters. After being called idiots, thanked profusely, had their manners upbraided, told during a 3-hour public hearing that they were unpatriotic and true patriots, the Berkeley City Council softened rhetoric of a January 29th council item that would have had staff write the Marines, telling them that their recruiters are uninvited and unwelcome in Berkeley. The council voted 7-2 to publicly recognize the right of recruiters to be in Berkeley while underscoring opposition to the illegal and unjust Iraq war and differentiating between that opposition and those who are members of the military. Hills area council members Betty Olds and Gordon Wozniak voted in opposition because they wanted even more kiss-ass stuff for the Marines. As far as I'm concerned, as I said before on this station, you cannot support the SS in Russia and oppose the war. You cannot support our troops and oppose the war. That's the problem we've had for the last 5 years. People have got to say, no. If you're going to go over there and start killing people, I don't support you and I don't support that. You know, I'm sorry. It's not a time to talk about magnificent sacrifices and the Marines defending our liberties. It's all bullshit. It has nothing to do with what's really going on over there and what these people are really doing. The fact that they're being seduced into it or pressured into it with money or all kinds of problems once they've signed on the dotted line. Yeah, I mean, this one can have some sympathy for people who are in that position. But to lionize and idolize folks as great heroes for doing this, for murdering and occupying a foreign country, I'm sorry. That is absolutely the wrong thing to do and the wrong message to send. And the Berkeley City Council is wrong in suggesting it supports the military. This country is not under attack in any way that the military is required. Yes, there were bombings in 9/11 because U.S. had troops in the Middle East and still does and is meddling elsewhere in all around the world. So you get blowback. Are we surprised? No. Fact of the matter is, that's criminal behavior by groups of people. You go after them as criminals. You don't use it as an excuse to multiply the national debt several times and spend $8 to $10 billion a month, and then to go over there and systematically kill people and occupy the country and loot the country, all under the rubric of freedom and democracy. I mean, it's boggled the mind, obviously, for 5 years, and it's still. Anyway, so the issue in front of the Berkeley City Council on Tuesday night was a bunch of people saying, some of them were saying, we're against the war, but we support the Marines. Others were saying, fuck the Marines, we're against the war. I think Code Pink was saying, we oppose recruiting, we support our military by saying they should not be sent over there. And these different distinctions were made. The interesting thing to me, and you're going to be hearing this on the tape, is the anger, the passion, and yet the civility with people of very different views argued and what went on there in front of the city council. There were hundreds of people there. There were four arrests early in the day for a couple involving young skateboarders. And there was a lot of police running around acting like they were protecting the peace, but doing nothing of the kind, just sort of actually antagonizing people. It reminded me of 1994 when the police set up this absurd triangular-like line to stop people from sitting on the sidewalk in front of what is now Taqueria Vallarta. It was then an empty lot. And the Matthews-Rotkin sitting ban law, which we still have in modified form, but the protesters were actually able to get rid of the worst part of it by their civil disobedience. And what the police did was they arrested 39 people for sitting, and then they just stood around trying to occupy parts of the sidewalk where people couldn't sit. So instead, they sat elsewhere, and then the police ended up by clubbing people and leaving, causing one woman to miscarry, another man's ribs to be broken, and Mayor Kennedy, all the while, did absolutely nothing, nor did Rotkin, you know, our great defender, the great sofa bed socialist that we now have on the city council. So up in Berkeley, it was a similar situation. They were acting, they were showing their authority by being armed with their truncheons and making this fearsome presence where nobody was threatening anybody else. They were having, you know, vigorous arguments is what they were having. Let's hear some of this now.
Around 10 to 6 on February 12, 2008. I'm in Berkeley. We're out in front of the Berkeley City Council building on Martin Luther King, next to Provo Park, where there are a large entourage of people opposing the Berkeley resolution to declare the Marines unwelcome in Berkeley and also establish a, essentially grant a parking permit to Code Pink for their, during their protest times. And it looks like there are less people than in the past who are here. People pretty sociable, although of different opinions. I don't see any Ron Paul banners. A lot of American flags, but I don't see. Here we have a dispute here. Let's tune in on this dispute.
That's not American. You people are traitors.
I detect a schism here, if not a chasm. Don't be afraid. So, anyway, how's it going?
And that was one of the rare situations where the people who are arguing, this was the right-wing person, the pro-Marine, Marines Uber Alles person, took off, and it didn't want to be recorded, though there's media running all over the place, and she was in the public place, so it was kind of strange. I think it happened on one other occasion, but generally, people were quite willing to have their views recorded.
So we have a dispute and still want to be put on tape. Act now to stop the mayor and end stupidity is one of the signs. A
lot of passions here, a lot of people kind of judging who's on what side. Here's a table with a lot of different shirts. There's some birthday cake. Looks like American flag birthday cake.
It does.
And our troops, our heroes, code pink with a C is a hammer and sickle, are the real traitors.
A little piece of that cake might be good.
The cake looks like it's good. It looks like it's good. Is this open to everyone, the cake, or do you have to be about
supporters?
Only for supporters. Okay.
Supporters.
Oh, well. Well, that's fair enough.
Yes. See, we should have thought of that.
No, no. He's helping Liberty along. He's just giving it a blood transfusion. Anyway, how do you know he's not a supporter? Now, come on.
I just guess.
He's a very shrewd judge of character.
He's a sanguine doctor.
Exactly. What's happening here is I went to the pro-Marine side, and they had a big American flag cake, and I asked for a piece of their chocolate cake, and they, no, and they only give it to supporters, and they could tell I wasn't a supporter, not because of my beard and long hair, because there was a lot of people with beard and long hair who were pro-Marine and against the resolution the city council passed, pro-recruiting, I should say, but because I had on a T-shirt that showed a picture of the Statue of Liberty being drained of blood by President Bush. I might say a very intimate kiss from Fuhrer Bush.
So over here we have help support our Marines, a different kind of, looks like refrigerator yellow ribbons, Pray for Peace, 82nd Airborne, USMC, in honor of World War II. And it's we have a sample of a fellow with a picture, a map of Iraq on his coat, Iraqi Freedom, Operation Iraqi Freedom. He's discussing shirts with the Help Support Our Marines table. And it looks like the large banner that was up here earlier is being taken down. How's it going? Getting a little chilly. So, anything you want to say for free radio here today?
Free radio?
Yeah. Live from Santa Cruz.
The communists, pink, should leave the country. Go to a country where they like.
Well, I see you have a cap that says Think Pink, See Shrink.
Yes.
What does your T-shirt say? If you can't run with a big dog, then stay under the porch. And you have a picture of a U.S. Marine big dog.
This shirt came from Camp Pendleton, where my niece was stationed.
And have you yourself been a Marine? Or you're...
No, I haven't. My son was, and my niece and her husband were.
And how far did you come today to the protest?
50 miles.
And first time in Berkeley? You've been here before?
God, I've never been in this hellhole before.
Have you had any conversations that you felt have been productive today?
No.
But you have expressed your views.
Oh, absolutely.
Anything you want to say out there? You've already said something, but to the radio audience.
For the radio audience, these kids are brainwashed. The public schools are allowing them out of school, and the schools are still collecting their funding from our pockets, tax dollars. Those kids aren't even old enough to think, let alone to know what they're protesting.
Now, did you vote yourself in the primary?
Absolutely.
Who'd you vote for?
The one that dropped out, Romney.
And what did you think of Ron? What did you think of Ron? Paul.
A little bit too radical for me. But overall, the man makes sense.
Of course, you know, he opposes the war in Iraq. You know that.
That's the part about him that bothers me.
Thanks for talking with us. We've been talking with...
Barbara.
Thank you, Barbara.
And then some people were like, oh, he started the problem. They feelings of the adults. You know, the kid was just verbalizing with people like we are right now. He rested down. They took
him. With a backpack truck with a T-shirt, drive out the grocery store. And a woman with a flag.
Like I said, I'm a grandma, and I was being pushed and shoved this morning. Just standing here saying, you know, support our troops. That's all I was saying. And they're shoving me and almost knocked me down. Okay?
Yeah.
That is not right. Sorry about that.
I completely agree with you on that issue. But I think this whole process has transformed into something different than besides Code Pink and them. I think Code Pink is honestly overdoing it. I think that they have the right to have their store there, and I don't think they should chain them there. I think that's really messed up. But I don't think they're making a big deal, but I partially agree. I'm against the war. But, you know, supporting people that your family, I agree with that. But the things they're doing in Iraq is kind of messed up. Do you agree with that?
Now, see, you really need to do some more research. You need to go. Okay, wait, a lot of these people have have children over there. You need to go on some different websites. You need to do more than just read the headlines.
I don't read the headlines at all. I'm a Muslim, and I have family that are in Morocco, Iran, and I have some family members in Iraq. And they are telling me what's going on, and I'm pretty sure they're not lying to me. I'm a cousin of theirs, and they're telling me what's going on. And I would believe them more than a newsline. I think news is a bunch of bullshit. I think that the people who write it can write anything they want and expect people to believe it. So I would rather believe my family, who are Muslims, there being attacked. And I've had two cousins actually killed.
They are gold star parents. They're blue star parents. You know what those are? A blue star parent, a blue star mom is a parent that has children in the war or in the service. Okay? They're veterans. A lot of us are Vietnam veterans. I'm a Vietnam era veteran. And they're gold star. Several gold star parents. Gold star parents have lost a child in war. Okay? And they're here. There's many of them here.
And I feel very sorry for them. But I think that what you're saying is accurate. But they're just changing. A lot of people, they're here against the Code Pink thing. And I don't personally agree with Code Pink. I think they're overdoing it a lot. But I think that the people here are just completely focused on something else. Like, Code Pink, I think they shouldn't be chaining themselves to a door. Like, this is supposed to be a free town. People want to, like, you know, do whatever they want. And I think they have the right to be there, you know, since it's a free place. But that's pretty much what I'm saying. Like, I don't agree with Code Pink, but I don't agree with, like, pro-war. Like,
But the point is, we're not pro-war. We support the troops. We want our sons home, too.
Yeah,
okay? We want them home. And they don't like war. They're not all, I gotta go to war. They're not. You know, I look at his shirt, it's silly. But, that's not it. They would much rather be home with their families. Okay?
Sure, everyone would want to be home with their families.
But I'm just glad that you don't seem to be drinking the Kool-Aid. You seem to be researching it and going to make it an educated decision on how you feel. I wonder about some of your friends, though. They were used by the guy with the orange thing. He was on TV making fun of the fact that he gave these out to all the skateboarders, and he thought it was very funny.
Honestly, I think the skateboarders are not anyone. But like, I'm friends with all the skaters. All they want is this spot. They don't care about the issues here. They just want to skate.
I'm just telling you what was on Channel 5. Go look on Channel 5.
And the issue here was that there were a couple of skateboarders arrested, I believe, and I don't have the details. They were taken. This upset some of the people who were the anti-war crowd, as I understand it. I actually talked to them earlier. I'm actually playing a later segment of the tape, and I may be playing more of this tape on Sunday, assuming we don't all fall asleep listening to it. This is the Berkeley City Council meeting of Tuesday. For those of you who just turned in, the scene on the street outside around 6 o'clock in the evening. Right across from the Berkeley City Council is a big park. And in that park, the pro-military, pro-marine recruiting, anti-Berkeley City Council people kind of set up their shop. And the Code Pink folks who are against the recruiting people set up their shop on the other side of the street. And the street was actually blocked off at this time. People were all, because there were hundreds of people there, and they were talking and debating. And as I said, the police were in the middle. Essentially, I suppose they were giving an intimidating presence so that in case there was some problem, they could march in and intimidate people more, all in the interest of preserving the peace. I don't really go for that particularly. I don't think it works. And I was actually very encouraged by both sides and the arguments that were made, not because everybody had the perfect arguments, but because in the process of arguing, it seemed to me that, first of all, the issue is being raised, and we haven't heard the issue at all. Really, for the last few years, much. I mean, Democratic Party people use it to elect their people and then do absolutely nothing. Republican Party people use it to rant and rave and stir up right-wing fanaticism and jingoism, and, you know, there's nothing new in that. And then purists on the left here in the station and elsewhere, or libertarians, have their own little groups, and they don't want to get together, as I just read in this article by John Walsh, Shame on Us All, Anti-Warriors Divided and Conquered. Again, hopefully I'll have him on the air on Sunday to talk about this. Again, back to the Berkeley City Council's, the people actually on the street addressing the issue.
Five and you'll see it.
A person that didn't mess up. Like, you can make fun of him. That's his right to, like, be a dick, but...
Right, but I'm just telling you and you and your buddies.
I know, so they are not afflicted by him. So pretty much I just got this shirt for a shirt, you know? Yeah, it's a shirt. It's free. Come on, you know? And, like, once this thing is over, I'm going to flip it inside out wearing the black shirt. So what they're doing is, you know, I think that if they're manipulating it, it's really messed up. But I think we're viewing it differently than just supporting them, to be honest.
So Free Radio thanks both of you for giving 2 points of view. Your name is?
Amin Thazi.
And you are?
Patty O'Day.
Thank you, Patty. Thank you.
Amin.
Yeah. And some more signs. Berkeley terrorists are no match for the USMC. And the perennial, I can't afford an actual sign. I may look harmless, but I raised a Marine, says one sign. Some folks with some red, white, and blue flag-covered outfits. And there's a man with an American flag. And walking back out on the street again from Provo Park, where most of the pro-Marine people are gathered. Oaks for Peace is a one-man sign. And the police officers are doing what the Santa Cruz police did. Here's some more police officers. They're kind of separating the crowd. Although they're not really. They're going into the middle of the crowd and forming their own little kind of concentric inner circle or oval. And it's not really clear why they're doing that. What are these cops doing anyway? Any ideas?
I have no idea.
I don't either. It looks like we have 3, 4, 5, 6, 7. Looks like 35 or 40 police officers here with helmets and batons, boots, lots of gear of different kinds. And a cop just shoved a guy who walked up. That was Officer Rosario, badge 99, if you're interested. Officer Rosario is the man who just shoved you. You can ask to speak to a sergeant if you'd like. It's not clear why the officer did that. Except perhaps they want to assert their authority. That's always very nice to do. Maybe the crowd will unite and go after the cops. That'd be interesting. It's not clear why the police are using force at one end of this rally to shove at least one man away and just standing here. I'm not really clear on this issue. I probably should ask, but I'm disinclined to do that. Although there seems to be a little bit of communication going on. One female police officer has stepped forward to chat with another officer. There's a Channel 3 reporter going on about his propaganda business. It seems the police kind of create a more passive situation. Before, people were arguing and talking. And indeed, on the other side, you see folks talking to the police. Whereas on this side, people are just standing here. Excuse me, let me step in front of the flag there. Any comments?
Very intimidating.
Well, oh, I'm trying to be. So you're wrapping yourselves in the flag.
Yeah, we are. Oh, yes.
The side I was on was the pro-Marine side. I was trying to. It was a relatively quieter side than the anti-war side, which had people with bullhorns shouting, singing. A lot of singing was going on. Though there were some people screaming pro-Marine sentiments or shouting pro-Marine sentiments on the other side. And this went on for a while. I'm going to play a little more of this, then I'm going to turn to an interview that should be coming up at 7:30. In fact, I think I'm going to do that now. I'll be playing more of this on Sunday, and hopefully there'll be some enlightening breaks where I'll actually talk about the issues as well as hear people raging at each other and my endless commentary. If you go to South Bay, indiebay.org/South Bay, that's Santa Cruz Indie Media, or actually it's South Bay Indie Media, and you go back to May 8th, 2006, there's a story, heavily armed police brutalize the community and target and arrest Copwatch monitors. And this is what Brian Helmsley, I think, is going to be talking about, assuming he calls in the next few minutes. I'm going to read a bit about it and kind of to anticipate his call. It is a Mexican community tradition to nonviolently celebrate Cinco de Mayo in peace and safety, and it is also a police tradition on Cinco de Mayo to brutalize and terrorize the community. On Friday evening, May 5th, 2006, there was a public and peaceful Cinco de Mayo music and spoken word event held on the corner of Story and King, which was viciously attacked by riot police. There is a decade-long pattern of police brutality on Cinco de Mayo, which has gone unchecked, but this year they were caught on videotape. Community volunteer video monitors were at the event to help maintain the safety of the community and document the atrocious decades-long pattern of brutality by the San Jose Police Department against the people of the East Side. The San Jose Police Department, true to its own barbaric tradition and history, attacked both the community and those who had put themselves in harm's way by monitoring San Jose police behavior with video cameras throughout the duration of the Cinco de Mayo weekend. The attack was caught on multiple videotapes. Six of these community volunteers were victimized, harassed, assaulted, beaten, arrested, and their footage and property seized at this peaceful legal gathering on private property by the San Jose police. Brian, age 27, Victor, age 23, Jake, Carlos, age 24, Jose, age 22, and Elsie, age 38. These volunteers were participants and organizers in this peaceful, non-confrontational event, attended by people and their families, men, women, and children from throughout the community, with the support of the local businesses and the permission of several of the on-site San Jose Police Department officers in attendance prior to the acts of unprovoked intimidation, terrorism, violence, and attack that were perpetrated by heavily armed, riot-clad, club-wielding, and fist-swinging officers of the San Jose Police Department against these volunteer monitors that night. We, the All Communities Defense Committee, on behalf of the East Side 6, demand the immediate and unconditional release of all these volunteers, the complete dropping of all charges against them, the immediate formation of a grand jury inquiry into the actions and patterns of terror of the San Jose Police Department, and an immediate moratorium, and that the community is allowed to safely celebrate Cinco de Mayo without being terrorized and victimized by the San Jose Police Department or anyone else. We hereby encourage and declare that our community volunteer community monitoring shall continue throughout the Cinco de Mayo weekend until such time as the San Jose police cease and desist their brutal, racist, and violent tactics of repression and intimidation against our community, and that the whole community is encouraged to come out in numbers with video cameras of their own, as is their right, to record and document the ongoing violence, hostility, bad attitudes, and uncontrollable behavior of the San Jose police against our community. Lastly, that we shall be issuing short video evidence of the entire Cinco de Mayo encounter, as well as several other encounters from throughout the city that night. And that's, I'm looking at the latest comments about this article, which kind of interesting. But I'm hoping to get some specific details, because one of these people, I think it's Carlos Padilla his name is, was already been taken to court and found guilty. This was several years later. And Brian Helmsley, I believe, is being tried and is going to court. And he's the man who I'm waiting for the phone call from and should be getting a call from momentarily. Let's see if I can get some more information about this. There's kind of back and forth comments. Police don't automatically become violent towards people when they become cops. The profession is sort of a magnet for people who are power-hungry anyway. With their newfound pig status, they have excuses to act out their violent authoritarian power trips. You know, I'm sure that's true with some police officers. I've always felt that the problem with the police is not the human beings underneath. People like to say, well, these are just people. No, they're people who are being regulated in a certain way and given certain kinds of pressures and certain kinds of powers. And that's the problem often with police departments, Santa Cruz Police Department included. Here's another statement. It is not, as they say, rogue cops, but police department policy. It is trained and the use of a type of combative physiological training, and it is true that they seek out violent and antisocial behaviors, i.e. middle income, the poor, or say single mothers, abusive fathers, and so on. And it's a way of gang the police force with higher ups and the ones that want to achieve that status. The more one becomes something, the more one becomes that. There's a lot of drug use that goes on behind closed doors. Steroids is the most common. Are there other drugs that were used as well? This could be our man calling in. And let's see. Hi, you're on Free Radio.
Hi, this is Brian Helmley.
Hey, Brian, not Helmsley, but Helmley.
That's right.
I'm sorry, Brian, but now we've got it right here.
Yes, we're not not descended from the capitalist scum.
Uh-huh.
So, yeah.
That's always good to know. Well, we probably all are in one's way descended from capitalist scum one way or another. It's a grueling scene here.
But I dealt with a lot of Leona Helmsley.
Ah, yes, she's the New York heiress or whatever, or landlord.
That particular capitalist scum.
Yeah, there you go. I've just read the article on Indy Bay. Heavily armed police brutalize the community and target and arrest Copwatch monitors, which is written by the All Communities Defense Committee. Were you a part of that committee?
It was a committee. Yes, I was. It was a committee that was formed that next day after Cinco de Mayo, or I guess it would have been 2 days later. That committee, I don't believe, is still in existence, but it was sort of the immediate reaction to what happened.
Now, this is 2 years ago, and I have read the article that, you know, that it's kind of a vague statement about brutalizing people who gathered on the 5th Cinco de Mayo and also who came to monitor police behavior, the Copwatch group. You're a member of Copwatch yourself?
Yeah. I mean, the organization Copwatch, I mean, that's a tactic that, people in communities around the country and even in other countries are doing to monitor excessive police behavior, just to be there. The presence of people monitoring with cameras tends to de-escalate the situation. There is now sort of an official San Jose Cop Watch. It's affiliated with Debug and the Coalition for Justice and Accountability in the San Jose area.
Give me a little bit more of that, and slow down on that, because I want people to know how they can contact Cop Watch or get more information on this. Debug is a publication?
It is a publication. It is a publication that is done by a collective of folks that are mainly hip-hop artists and different organizers from different communities and whatnot, but it's trying to be as representative of the folks in the South Bay as possible. I'm, recently a part of it. It's been around for years, but, there's always been an interest in police accountability and just the injustice system overall.
I think I found their website myself, I think when I was looking at the Carlos Padilla case, that's one of the six. You call yourselves the East Side Six?
That is what we call ourselves.
And Debug can be found. If you Google for Debug San Jose, you should be able to find it.
Definitely. And the website is www.siliconvalleydebug.org. That's all one word. A Google search will find it.
And this is sort of a publication that has a lot of stories about ongoing issues in San Jose that aren't covered by the mainstream media.
That's exactly right, especially as it targets youth of color. That's really the folks that write for it and that are, that it's addressed to.
So on May 1st, 2006, we had the largest protest here in Santa Cruz, in Santa Cruz history, against the repressive immigration practices of the last 20 years and, of course, the threatened even more repressive laws, which I think those protests helped to beat back.
Yep.
That was 2 years ago. I mean, I was mightily impressed with that, but then, of course, everybody went home and never came back. That's how it looked. How did it look from the San Jose side?
It was the biggest protest in the history of San Jose, and it was the biggest protest in the history of the country, as far as I know. It was also the only general strike to have been successfully, granted it wasn't a total general strike, but it was certainly across industries and across job sites, so I'd say that it was definitely fits part of, or it doesn't fit like the grand sort of revolutionary narratives sort of expected general strike, but it was a general strike and was incredible. And I think that the revolution like revolutionary stuff, you know, is a little bit too dry and theoretical if it can't recognize how beautiful that was. That, you know, people who were so directly being targeted by racist, xenophobic craziness here in the U.S. rose up and just, you know, walked out of their
job. Well, 3,000 to 6,000 people were in Santa Cruz. How many people in San Jose showed up at the on May 1st, 2006?
The estimate that I remember was 100,000. It was definitely, I mean, there was people still leaving the staging area by the time people were getting to the end point. So, you know, if you figure that that's 3 or 4 lanes of traffic all the way, that's a lot of people.
And 5 days later, Copwatch tried to monitor events that were going on in downtown San Jose on the Cinco de Mayo?
That's correct. There had been plans put in place by two collectives. One was No More, that was trying to refound the Black Berets, who are now active in the San Jose area, and then also the Peninsula Anarchist Collective that I was a part of at the time. And we had been working to bring trainers down from Berkeley, and we had done trainings and were, you know, getting prepared and making sure that we all had cameras and different technical things that we needed. But, yeah, we've been planning for quite some time to do something on Cinco de Mayo just because of the history of police abuse on Cinco de Mayo, even before the May Day stuff really got going, before the movement for immigrants' rights really kicked off and got so big. We had already been planning it, so we just, you know, we just kept on with what we were going to do.
And you're not talking about any kind of violent or even civil disobedient actions. You were talking about simply monitoring the scene in certain areas where in the past there have been police misconduct?
That's absolutely right. The cop watching, everyone has a right to observe police behavior. And there are certain limitations on that. You shouldn't interfere with their administration of quote-unquote justice, but you do have a right to observe based on First Amendment protections. And cop watches have sprung up all across the country over the last, I don't know, 20 years, 15, 20 years, and people were doing it before that. The Black Panthers were doing it. There was a community action patrol in San Jose back in the 70s that was doing it.
Actually, we did it here in Santa Cruz yesterday at the farmer's market when the police were driving away people some about a month ago who are drummers using the new Mayor Coonerty's new anti-homeless law. It's actually just it's a law that says you can't walk into a parking lot without a vehicle or car in an area where traditionally people have used parking lots for a variety of purposes.
It's a very intelligent tactic. It does a lot of things.
How many of you were there? How many cop watchers were there? Because I know I've spoken with Tom Belote, who helped set up Santa Cruz Cop Watch for the brief period of time that it survived, and also, as I understood, was setting up a San Jose Cop Watch for a while.
Oh, really?
Yeah, that was like 3 years ago. I mean,
well, I would like to get in touch with him.
Yeah, well, give me a call after the show, and I'll try to put you in touch with him, although he's a hard man to reach. How many cop watchers were you that night, 2000, or that day, 2006?
There were 20 volunteers, and we were going to break into teams of 3 or 4 so that we would be able to be in 4 or 5 places simultaneously and be, you know, able to move quickly. We had a contact list and, you know, organizing materials that, you know, that were basically incident reports and, you know, other information.
And what did you do? I mean, how what happened when you attempted to? You met and you were going to break, you got your video cameras, you got your documentation ready for reports people might make, and you set off, and then what happened?
Before we were able to set off, there's typically every Cinco de Mayo there is a gathering at the corner of Story and King on the east side, which is, you know, mainly Mexican and Chicano community. Overall in San Jose, and in particular on Cinco de Mayo, that's a really popular cruising area. A lot of people celebrate Cinco de Mayo there, and also, you know, the cultural meaning of Cinco de Mayo, there's a cop stopping. I'm parked in a car in front of a friend's house.
Cops are watching you now, or?
maybe if I'm
so it's activist people. Watching by the cops. Huh?
Apparently so. So anyway, we were there and we were getting ready to to leave the area after this sort of celebration had been going on for several hours.
And the police had been well behaved, or?
The police had been well behaved. They had been pretty clearly. The people there in the crowd were pretty openly, critical of the police's presence. And when the police I'm sorry, this cop, I think, is probably going to...
What? Tell me what's happening to you right now. Where you're parked on the street?
Oh, I'm in front of a friend's house in Palo Alto, and I think this is a cop. Is it a cop? I think it's a cop.
Is a police officer watching you?
Yeah.
Where,
yeah.
Is he in a vehicle, or is he standing on
the
street?
He's in a vehicle, looks like, anyway, I'll just continue with the story.
Oh, feel free to interrupt it if something happens.
Sure, talk about that.
Yeah.
There had been, we had brought out a public address system to the corner of Story and King on Cinco de Mayo, and we,
But did you have a permit?
No, we did not have a permit. Though we did speak to people in the businesses there locally, right there, Ritmo Latino and Gallo Guido was a taqueria right there. And, there was a Starbucks right next to it, and they were bringing out little cups of, mocha, frappuccino, blah, blah, blah. And they were just bringing that out into the crowd.
Do they normally require permits for public address systems, the police department and the city, or not? Was that one of the reasons why there was a controversy or not?
No. In fact, we got verbal permission to be there from one of the officers. So the cop is pulling up alongside right now. Well,
so the police officer is coming over. He's taking out his baton, approaching, or
no? What's going on? I'm not real sure. He's just kind of the car is unmarked. Anyway, that's not the point. The point is that on Cinco de Mayo, we did not have a permit. We did have an amplified sound system. We did have, a mic that was sort of an open mic for people to talk about their concerns about Cinco de Mayo, or about police brutality and police
At what
behavior.
Point did the police begin to act up?
Well, at about 10:30. The cop drove away, so I feel much better now. The police started to really misbehave at about 10:20. There was an order to disperse. The crowd started to run away pretty rapidly.
Why was there an order to disperse?
That's an excellent question, and that's going to be coming up in my trial next week.
Let's talk about that right now, because we've kind of led up to that. What are you charged with?
Well, the initial citations were failure to disperse, resisting arrest, rioting, and lynching.
Lynching meaning taking somebody away from a police officer.
Yes. But, that is such an ugly word to use against people that are trying to do anti-racist work out in the community. Like, to imply that it's somehow, this horribly violent, white supremacist thing, to slap that on people who are just at a protest. And we weren't even protest. The really
you were cop watching
here is this is not civil disobedience or protest. This is cop watching.
So
everyone has a constitutional right to do.
So there are four. Are these felony or misdemeanor charges?
The lynching is a felony charge. That wasn't actually. I was not arraigned for that. That went away once arraignment came.
Okay.
So it was kind of like an intimidation tactic on the part of the police.
So you're charged with three misdemeanors?
Three. It was. I was arraigned on two misdemeanors, failure to disperse and resisting arrest. And that's what I'll be going on trial for next week.
Now, did you hear a... First of all, I don't want to ask you any questions that could be used against you in trial.
Right.
And I don't know. Although you've probably spoken about this case publicly, and the police probably have that testimony anyway, right?
Exactly. Although your instincts are... I appreciate that very much.
Sure.
I've talked about it a lot, and so go ahead and ask me questions.
Did the police give a warning that was audible?
They gave. It was broadcast through the PA system on their car, and
On what basis? Why did they give the warning? What was the basis on which they claimed it was an unlawful assembly?
Well, they don't have to. They can just say it whenever they feel like it's an unlawful assembly. I think that it was because it was a group of mainly Mexican and Chicano youth gathered at the corner, partying, waving Mexican flags after the biggest protests in the history of the country. And, you know, the police are, you know, that's, they cannot tolerate large groups of people of color, and they really, really can't tolerate it if it's on their national holiday, you know, like the sort of national pride kind
have
of
you,
holiday.
Have you read the police reports? I assume you have.
Yes, yes, I have.
What do they claim was the basis on which they issued the unlawful assembly claim?
They claim that it was an unlawful assembly because they claim that bottles were thrown at them and that people were driving unsafely in the intersection. And something that does happen at that intersection is people will, you know, peel out or, you know, lay burners down and just be, you know, goofy in their cars and make a lot of noise and make a lot of smoke. And so the police were saying that that caused our gathering, this place where we were, to be an unlawful assembly, even though that was the drivers doing it. And, you know, so that those are the two concerns.
So what happened was you attempted to document what the police were doing in the so-called unlawful assembly, and they claimed that you, by so doing, became a part of the unlawful assembly.
Yes. Yes, absolutely.
And what is it that the police claim? Did the police claim you threw bottles, rioted, or took? Did they claim you took people away from their custody?
The initial citation would suggest that, yeah, that was what they were claiming. But what they actually arraigned me on was failure to disperse and resisting arrest, which they basically, once they declared the gathering to be unlawful, anyone who doesn't run away and, you know, run really, really fast away from that gathering, then I guess is...
Were people being clubbed or struck by police who were in the area?
Yes, yes.
How many clubbings did you personally see?
One of the other arrestees was beaten the worst of anybody that I saw, and she had bruises all over her body. And
her name?
Her name was Elsie Sanchez.
And is she being tried, too?
She was cited with assault on an officer with a deadly weapon.
In other words, she attacked the officer's baton with her head?
No, it's even better than that. It was that she was having a panic attack and was, you know, calling out for help from me, calling out for help from, you know, her boyfriend, calling out for help from just anybody, and struggling with the officers. So they shoved her over a planter, and when she fell backwards and her legs flew up in the air, one of the feet kicked a cop in the head, I guess. And so that apparently is assault on an officer with a deadly weapon.
And she pled to that?
What, say again?
She pled to that charge?
She pled to a lesser charge. When she was arraigned, the public defender that she had basically counseled her to plead out, and she wasn't, you know, I don't fully understand how the decision was made, but I think it was based on a lot of fear and, you know, just the way that the wisdom of the communities of color in this country is that you cannot receive a fair trial if you're not white. And among poor white people, there's an assumption that you can't get a fair trial.
And there was, in fact, one trial. Carlos Padilla was tried, correct?
He was tried, and he was convicted on failure to disperse and unlawful assembly.
And when was that?
That trial concluded 3 weeks ago, maybe a month ago. It would have been in January.
And were you present for that trial?
I was present for the parts that could be. I had to work, but I was there for parts of it.
And how long did it take? How long did the trial go on?
The trial went for a week, starting on Monday, concluding. Well, the jury came back on the Monday.
And what was the nature? What was the racial composition of the jury?
Racial composition of the jury would have been majority white. I believe there was an African American woman and Indian. Like Asian American woman, and then I believe the rest were white, about split evenly on gender, it looked like.
Now, from what you saw and from what you heard from others who watched the trial, first of all, was the public defender, do you have a public defender or a private lawyer?
He had a public defender.
Was it an incompetent public defense?
In my opinion, it was not a zealous defense. I think that incompetent might be a little harsh, but I think it's true. And I think that, he was advised to not take the stand and no witnesses were called. And I think that that basically means that that public defender either didn't believe that he was innocent or was incompetent.
And you, I hope, do not intend to duplicate this bad scene.
Absolutely not. I also have the privilege of having my family paying for a private attorney who listens to me and, wants to do what I ask him to do. And it's totally different from the experiences of anyone else I've talked to who's had to go with public defenders or conflict
lawyers. Name of your attorney is?
Matthew Soroka.
How do you spell it?
M-A-T-T-H-E-W. Last name is S-I-R-O-K-A. And he's been excellent. And he is in, his office is in San Francisco. And I think that that's part of the reason that he's willing to take on the case.
Is he taking it because of a large fee or because he believes in the case?
It was a personal recommendation from a mutual friend, and he is genuinely concerned with First Amendment rights. And, I think that he is, a conscientious.
He's charging you $300 or $400 an hour is my question.
Oh. No, it is not full price, I would imagine. I think, especially at the beginning, it was very modest. I mean, now that it's going to trial, it's going to get more expensive.
Unfortunately, I only have about three or four minutes left in the hour.
No problem.
Lot of this I'd like to explore. When is the date of the trial?
The trial is the 19th, which is Tuesday.
So that's next week.
That is correct.
Do you actually think they're going to try, or are they going to drop charges?
Well, I would be happy to accept their apologies and the dismissal of the charges.
Oh, they won't apologize, but they might drop the charges.
No, I really don't know what they're thinking. To have strung this out over 2 years and filed it in the first place, I really don't know what they're thinking. I don't expect them to drop it. I think that they would. I would expect them to continue.
Have you had any community support? Are there any organizations that intend to show up in mass? Or have there been any good articles written on this where people can get more information about your case and Carlos Padilla's case and in terms of how the trial went?
In terms of Carlos's trial, the best coverage was in the Spanish-language press, especially Univision, and you can probably find that through Google News. In terms of organizations that are supporting us, there's Silicon Valley Debug, and then the Black Berets, San Jose Black Berets, is the organization that Carlos and others are a part of that has been, part of. Anyway, that people on that were targeted are also part of that organization.
San Jose has a police auditor who I've always regarded as a major joke. That is to say, somebody is supposed to be keeping an eye on the police department. Has she, or was it she? I don't know if it's still.
It is Barbara Attard, yeah.
Oh, Attard. Oh, I guess I got a new one. I know Barbara Attard, sort of. The auditor, of course, has very little power in San Jose. Is there an interest about, have any of these officers been investigated for excessive force who were involved in this Cinco de Mayo incident 2 years ago?
I would say that there was definitely something in their personnel records that led them to be that allowed us to have some
pitches motions. In other words,
yeah, the pitches motion was sustained, like it was like granted by the judge that we could look at the.
Do you have witnesses coming forward who will testify that these officers have, in previous occasions, either lied or been violent and against members of the public?
At this time, we do not. The process of a pitches motion in Santa Clara County is extremely limited. We were only given the mailing addresses of two people that had complaints against one of the officers. We don't know which one. And that was a fairly successful pitches motion. Most pitches motions are not granted at all. Santa Clara County is very reactionary in the least. Because they have they're fully funded. The property taxes around here and the overall just fairly large amount of money in the valley allows the municipal government to have a very fully funded district attorney, and the public defenders really are not much help.
So on Tuesday, I guess you will have jury selection, and then on Wednesday, what, the prosecution will begin its case, and then Thursday, and